Hello, Richard.
Hi, Ludo.
First of all, thank you very much for agreeing to participate in this interview.
A pleasure.
You share and teach the headless way through workshops, online teachings, and books. And the headless way is a direct way of seeing who we really are, and it was initiated by Douglas Harding. And you first saw who you really are at a Headless Way workshop with Douglas Harding in 1970. So it was yesterday, and you're committing to making this vision as widely available as possible. So my first question is a very basic one, but could you please share your spiritual journey and your mentors and influences that have shaped your understanding?
Yes, I'd probably start with my parents, who were very open-minded and not particularly religious at all. And then I was influenced by a headmaster at a boarding school I went to when I was 9 to 12 or something. He was a Christian, and he inspired me with a sense of mystery. And yes, a deep sense of mystery. So he was open-minded. And then I pursued Christianity for a few years when I was very young, early teenage, influenced by this headmaster. And then I ran out of interest with that. It wasn't delivering this experience of mystery, this going beyond the scriptures or something. And so I started reading up on other religions when I was in my teenage years, came across Buddhism, read up on Zen, and thought, oh, I'd like to find out who I am. I suppose these influences gave me different languages. And Zen gave me another language at a very superficial level. I went with my brother when I was 17 to the London Buddhist Society summer school. I come from the north of England, so this is traveling with my brother by train down to this place. It was very confusing to begin with. One day, one lecture was Tibetan Buddhism, one was Vipassana, one was Zen. I didn't know what was what. And one afternoon, someone said to myself and my brother, oh, why don't you go along to the workshop with Douglas Harding? I'd never heard of Douglas Harding. Went along, and Douglas got us to do the experiments, and I saw who I was. And at that point, I thought, that is brilliant. To tell you the truth, I was talking to my brother recently, and for the first half hour, we were typical teenagers and we were really resistant and we were making objections to everything. And then we looked at each other and said, what are we doing? And we relaxed and let it in and just looked. And of course, you can't see your own head. Instead, you see the world, one consciousness, everything is in you. And I suppose Douglas Harding then gave us the means to access it whenever we liked, and the language to start to explore what it meant in a very modern, non-religious way, in a way. At the same time, at that Buddhist Society summer school, there was a teacher from Thailand called Dhiravamsa. He was the Chowkhun, had come over from Thailand and was assistant abbot at a temple in London, and he gave a talk. And over the next few years, well, what happened next was that I got deeply into the Headless Way. I went and stayed with Douglas a lot, became friends with him and friends with all his friends, and so became part of this loose network of friends, of people who were enjoying being headless, being aware of this and having the language to explore it and the means of sharing it. So it's not just an idea, it's a direct experience. You can't see your head, it's a non-verbal experience, then you can think about it in your own way. Now, over the next few years, every so often I would come across this guy, Dhiravamsa, giving a talk. And he was impressive. Douglas knew him a bit. And then, after about 8 years of deeply absorbing myself in the Headless Way, reading everything Douglas had written, traveling with him, doing workshops, starting to develop my own style of workshop, I heard him give a talk. And I was impressed. And I went on a retreat with him, nearly left, stayed, and was impressed by Vipassana meditation. Or rather, I think what it did was, after 8 years of being with Douglas Harding and thinking a lot and working with it a lot, I needed just to step back. I didn't need to step back from headlessness. I just needed to step back a bit and be with it. And I went and lived at this meditation center in England, started by Dhiravamsa. And looking back, what it gave me was 4 years in a meditation center of being with the experience of my true nature, quietly being still with it. Because it wasn't really the place to communicate about the headless way. I still traveled with Douglas during that time, still did workshops. But as soon as I got there, within a few months, they recognized I'd got experience of my true nature. And they said, "Will you train?" And I trained and led 10-day Vipassana retreats for about 3 years. When I left that, I didn't know what to do. I had no money. I was 30. I traveled a bit. I didn't know what to do with my life. And then I came across a friend in London who was training in therapy, and I thought, I will train in therapy so that I understand that language. Because now I deeply understood the Headless Way language, I understood the Buddhist language, and Douglas was very busy those days giving workshops around the world. I was part of that, but I was twiddling my thumbs. I didn't know really what to do in that sense, because anyone wanted a workshop, they would ask Douglas, of course. And I thought, well, I do want my life to be about sharing this. It's just so brilliant. What can I do in a way? Douglas once said to me, he quoted John Milton, the poet, "Those they also serve who only stand and wait." Well, I knew that was true, but it's still frustrating, isn't it? Anyway, I then trained in psychotherapy in order to understand what that method of healing was about. And when I'd finished, I thought, well, I've got a piece of paper here. I can do this as a job. So I did. That was one of the ways I earned money. I loved it. You develop your own style, you see. And so my headlessness deeply influenced my way of being with clients. And I kept in touch with Dhiravamsa, and he has inspired me with his life of meditation. And he was a complex character as well. We all are. But he walked his talk in that way. So I would say the deep influences are, my parents, the headmaster, Douglas Harding, the biggest, Dhiravamsa. And then these days, it's because my mission is to share, as you said, the Headless Way, and to declare this wonderful message about who we are and bring it onto the front burner in this modern way that can be accepted without you having to join a club or believe in God knows what. It just look for yourself now, what are you looking out of? And my joy is to have friends I share this with, face to no face, you see, and who are seeing it too. So it's equal. I don't see myself as a teacher who has something my students don't have. I suppose I am a teacher in that, for example, I know that exercise, the experiments, and someone might not. I can take them through that. But as soon as you've shared the seeing, it's equal, and you're friends, not student teacher. And Douglas recognized this, valued this, had many friends. I saw how that worked. I've continued to just grow my circle of friends, and I see something wonderful happening in the world where this awareness of who we are is growing and growing. So that's the
So you talked about the headless way and how to recognize that we have no head. And can you explain the foundations of this this way, this headless way? What constitutes the essence of this practice?
yes. Well, I'd say the essence is curiosity and wonder, and wonder at the fact that you are, and the response of not going through your whole life, not looking into who you are, not acting as if you know, but having the interest and the curiosity and perhaps even the courage to not take for granted what society says you are, but look for yourself. And in terms of the foundations, if I look back, for example, at Douglas, that was his initial inspiration, was this curiosity about who he was and this awareness that he was and how odd that was, how odd it is to be. You can't explain it, and how this is the great gift somehow that you are, and to treasure that gift. Now, then to ask what you are. Now, Douglas had this as a child, but immature, it was there. And he grew up, this is the foundation of the Headless Way, if you like. He grew up in a very strict fundamentalist Christian group. And although it was very narrow and dogmatic, it had at its heart the sense that behind the world was love and a one being. Now, he left it in under rather dramatic circumstances, in a way, when he was 21. You know, they cut off from him. It was a cult. And for a year or two, he was training in architecture. I mean, he was a bright young man and got himself into university to train as an architect off his own energy, you know, that. And very soon he came back to this curiosity about who he was. You know, I spent a year or two just trying out all the things young people did, you know, going to cinema and dating and smoking and whatever, and then came back to this quest, this curiosity about himself, and this determination not to waste his life just having a good time, but to actually pause and say, what is going on? You can't explain it. Who, what? It was the question, who am I? And the first things, he was in London, 21, 2, 3, whatever. And the first things that occurred to him was, first of all, he realized he was made of billions of cells. So him as one person, was made of billions of little animals. I mean, they are alive, living beings. How can that be that or this community of billions, I think, of these little animals make up one person that's talking now? I mean, how does it work that I decide to open my hand and these billions of cells all do it? And they don't know about me. And I don't have to know about them. You know, I mean, it's just that's the revelation of science, you see. So that intrigued him. And then he thought, you know, I'm like a cell in the body of society. So there is the beginning of awareness that you've got layers. You're not just human. You're made of cells, which are made of molecules, which are made of atoms, which are made of electrons. And you're part of a society, which is part of life, which is part of the planet, the star, the galaxy. So he got this idea of layers. And his first book on this kind of thing when he was 30, 34 or something. I mean, he was working as an architect and he finished this big book. And it was all about how you don't stop at your skin, that you extend into your tools, that you pick up a spoon and you extend into it. And then you can amputate it and grow another limb, like a car, or you can grow another endlessly. Your clothes are kind of, add-ons, but they're you. And you extend it, and that's your link with the next layer of society, you see. So you can see that. By this time, he was thrilled. He'd found something to explore that no one else seemed to be doing. He went to India with his wife, who got married, and went there to work as an architect. And the war broke out, so he was drafted into the army. He'd written another book on this called The Unconventional Portrait of Yourself, which extended these ideas and had this sense of all these layers like an onion with nothing at the center. And he was very clear by then that the basis is of all this is this sense of curiosity and wonder, and not taking for granted, and not wanting to leave it till you're on your deathbed to ask who you are, who's been living your life. Because if it's not who you thought it was, then you've missed something rather big. And especially when you find out that, it's not just that I'm not Richard, I'm George. It's I'm not Richard, I am the whole thing. Now, if that's true, that should sort of make the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, Anyway, he had this idea of these layers and this strange, mysterious nothingness at the center. Which, of course, all the religions sort of talk about in different languages. But he was a scientist in a way. He was looking for verification. He wouldn't believe anything just because someone said it. It had to be testable. And then one day, he looked down. I mean, he was looking at a picture, but he looked down and saw that his body disappeared above his chest into nothing. Now, that's the first person point of view. So there, suddenly he'd verified the nothing, full of the everything. Well, at that point, this is 1943 in India, he realized he'd hit gold, he'd found what he was looking for. But then he spent the next 8 years working out how this worked out in terms of perception, and well, I can feel my head, or I can see my nose, or you can see my face. And he developed just a radically new, original way of understanding who we are in the world, which very few people have realized what he's done yet. But it will come because it's true and it works. But then that was published in 52, 1952, got back into architecture, and then. It was really a number of things. I mean, there's a lot in the story, but in the late 60s, he developed these experiments, pointing, single eye, face to no face, close your eyes, no boundary, ways of testing a hypothesis that you're not what you look like, that you're not like the one in the mirror, that here you're, there's your face in the mirror, here's no face. You're not face to face with others, and therefore, two. It's face to no face, therefore one. I mean, game changer, game changer. And developing these experiments, which was happening when I met him, so I was part of that whole, because everyone joined in because it was such fun, and the whole approach is to experiment and to take a fresh look, you see. And the experiments made it possible for anyone to share this. And it also, because Douglas was making friends, and he, whenever he shared this with anyone, he said, well, You're not a student, you're a friend, and you don't have to, if you want to come and visit as a friend to share our different responses to this experience. And so a community of friends that I was part of grew up of people interested in this. And in that community, it was very clear that no one's got it better or worse. And you can't not get it. I mean, you can't see your head. What you make of it will be your meaning, which you can share with others. So a sort of radically tolerant community was growing based on the experience of your true nature. This is a breakthrough. And this was made possible by the experiment and by Douglas remaining true, not taking it on as something he'd got, but this is observation. Anyone can do it, you see, so it's kind of equal. So Douglas died 2007, and I've continued sharing this very, very important message that really applies to everyone, because it's about you and it's about noticing what it's like to be you. And as Douglas made clear in the many books he wrote, it's got fantastic implications, applications in ordinary life, in politics, in health, and all of that. So I was really deeply influenced by Douglas, but by others. But you have to make it your own. And I've got many, many friends I share this with, and a growing number of friends. And I value the sharing of this just enormously. So, I mean, a pleasure to be with you, Ludo, and
Thank you.
to communicate about this. And we're coming from the same place. You can't see Ludo's face. You're empty for Richard. I can't see Richard's face. I'm empty for Ludo. There you go.
You said that Douglas Harding wrote a lot of books, but is it a requirement to read these books for having these experiences?
No, I mean, I don't quite know what requirement means. You're not required to do anything. But in terms of walking the headless way, if I can put it like that, all you need is you. All you need is love. All you need is you. And you are the authority on you. And the experience of your true nature is a non-verbal experience. Now, I need words to communicate with you about it. So I'll say, I can't see my head, instead, I see the world. But that is not the truth. That is a way of describing this non-verbal experience, but it's about the most simple you could do. Of course, when you see this, see, I say everyone has access to this because you can't see your head, but not everyone will value it. That's the difference. The difference is not in the experience. People say, I don't get it. I say, can you see your head? No, you've got it. But it doesn't mean anything to me. Ah, all right. So it doesn't mean anything to you. But you can't deny the experience. At least I say you can't, I can't. Now, then you are into what does it mean? How can it help me? So what? And that's a very creative edge, isn't it? If someone says, well, but so what? I can't see my head. Say, well, that's a very good question. What do you think? You see, I'll tell you, I can tell you what I think, but let's have a conversation here. And the books by Douglas Harding are his own sharing and working out of what it meant to him. And of course, as you live with it, it keeps meaning new things because it's alive. It's never endingly fresh and coming up with new ideas and new meaning and new applications, you see. Well, if Douglas had lived another 100 years, he'd have written another 50 books. So You don't have to read his books, but if you're interested in what someone else's response to their true nature, who was, for obvious reasons, very interesting representative there, because he developed it. Well, developed the Headless Way. Read him, but no, you don't have to do anything. But the thing is that the experience is solo. You're just aware for yourself, a kind of private experience, that you're space for the world. But your understanding of it is social, because language is social. And even if you are thinking about it to yourself, you're using language, which is a social currency or social means. And if you want to find out what you think about anything, a good way to do that is just to write or to talk or to communicate, as well as just think. Because if you actually put it into words, it's clearer than if you're just vaguely thinking about it. And so having a community where people are aware of this and are valuing it means you can, like with you, talk about it without having to explain every full stop. I totally accept you've got the experience, you see, but you will be thinking about it differently. Well, now we can have a like we are doing, conversation. Yeah.
And so it's based on experiments and on the direct experience. And could
Yes.
you how could you guide us in a simple practice to just to see that we have no head? Is it possible to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're watching this, let's just notice that you can't see your own head. I can't see mine. I can see it on the screen. I can see Ludo's on the screen, but I can't see it here. So that's the first thing. I just say, well, just I can't see my head. Aren't you? Isn't it the same for you? Instead, don't you see the world? So that's the first thing. The pointing one is quite good. I mean, people find it a little bit embarrassing to point, but and childlike. But experiments are childlike. They're about actually doing things and looking and not assuming you know. And that might be a test tube experiment, or it might be, just doing something very looking, looking. So what you do is you point at something, it's a preparatory thing. The viewer can do this. You point at something in front of you and you look at what you're pointing at. So that's the experiment. You direct your attention. So I'm pointing at a flower in your kitchen or wherever you are. A plant there, and I can see a flower, I can see a plant, I can see something there. Simple. Now you point back at a place you're looking out of, and you look to see if you see anything there. If the viewer is well worth doing, because thinking about it is different from doing it. It's embarrassing, but now I just see my finger, I don't see my head. You see, so this non-verbal experience. So there's just Ludo, then there's my finger, and there's nothing. Now, people say, well, so what? See, I say, well, normally I think there's somebody here. I think I'm behind a face. But I see there isn't. Now, if I take that seriously, when I'm looking at Ludo, that means I'm not face to face with Ludo, I'm face to no face. So now I start to develop a language that articulates this first person experience, see, which is different from the normal language, which is third person based. What I mean is, if there was another person over on my right here looking at me and Luda, if we were in the kitchen together, I understand from that perspective, it's relativity, they would see us head to head, separate by a meter or whatever. You see? Now it's relativity. From there, that's what the situation is. But from here, it's different. See? Relative to here, it's not head to head. Is head to no head. So I now articulate the language, use the language to articulate it. It doesn't dismiss or invalidate that view, it adds on to it. So now I say, I am head to head with you. I have your face instead of mine. I am you. I am space for you. I am empty for you. You see. So suddenly you are given permission to look for yourself and to start to take that seriously. See, I take seriously the other person's view of me. I'm going to turn that off. Take seriously the other person's view of me. Now I'm taking seriously my own view, you see. And if I put my hands like this, the viewer can do that. My hands are huge. They go from the ceiling to the floor. They're like giant hands. And between my hands is not Richard's face. It is the universe, the world. See, and my glasses, two holes there, now become one eye, you see. And I can, when I do this, I know the other person, or you see my touching my head, but for me, the sensations, my hand disappeared and the sensations happen in space, you see. So I assume, I take for granted, I accept that you're in the same condition, that you can't see your head, you see, that you're looking out of a single eye, that you have Richard's face now instead of Ludo's. Why would I not accept that that's true? Even if you deny it, I just, you know, I mean, I just can't imagine it. It's this is not a matter of mood. It's not a matter of achievement. It's just the way you're built. You're built open. Now, whether you accept that and value it and attend to it or not is totally up to you, of course, but it's still true as far as I'm concerned, you see. And I've come to this recently, that this deep acceptance that we're all in the same condition. And so this means that this must affect how I behave to you, how I think about you. See, it's a deep insight into your nature. So no, it's not, it's a social thing. And of course, there are other experiments, lots of them. Movement, you see, you're driving and you're not moving. The scenery is moving through you. Or talking, my voice comes out of nowhere. Or closing my eyes, and I find I cannot say how big I am, or what shape I am, or how old I am. All of that, you see. So, the website has got lots of these experiments on our app, Headless Way app, our YouTube channel. So it's thrilling and it's liberating, and it means that you are kind of handed this means of investigating yourself rather than only having the social view, which, well, I could say more about that, but you see, this makes sense. I say it makes sense. And humanity, in the long run at least, will take on the truth. You know, we've moved from the flat earth to the round earth going around the sun, right? The flat earth, the sun going around the earth or whatever, to the round earth. Well, that is just different points of view. See, but we now, to begin with, when Copernicus came along, I suspect there were quite a few people who didn't accept it. But after a while, it proves to be A, verifiable in a way, and B, helps you navigate better. I mean, you can understand why some planet seems to go forward and back. You know, it's retrograde. It's because of the place of the Earth, you see. So it works better. The truth works better. So in the end, the old generation may not accept it, but the new generation growing up, just that's just. You know, it's like people who were born after 2000. You know, mobile phones and the internet are just totally part, you know, of their lives. But for me, you have to make a huge adjustment. And I have a friend, you know, friends who don't you have a friend in Wales who doesn't use the internet? I mean, never used it because it's too old. You know, I mean, etc. Well, the headless way. See, this is what the work that Douglas Harding did philosophically and scientifically, if you like, to show how it is true and how it makes sense, and how it makes better sense than the old view. I believe that in the long run, there'll be a generation that grows up where this is just, what, because it's true, you see. And I'm talking to you, aware that you're in me and I'm in you. And if I came up to you, you'd disappear, right? Because I'd get to a patch of skin and then cells and molecules, and you've got layers. So if I test it that way, see, and then you tell me you can't see your head, you're looking at nothing, let's put it like that. And I say I'm the same, so I've got your appearance emanating from that nothing is appearing here in me because you can't see it. You're broadcasting it. I can tell you, reflect it back to you. So that's how you become self-conscious, is through others. And the same the other way around, that I'm nothing here, but by the time I'm observed from where you are, I have manifesting as Richard. But I can't see that. So I need you to tell me, and I'm reading your reactions all the time to build up my sense of Richard. You're nodding. So, okay, that means you must be seeing me and agreeing with me, or at least understanding me. Did you see? So when you're a baby, you are pre-verbal. You know nothing about yourself. You're the emptiness, but with no idea of how you are manifesting, and you don't care. But you need to be totally taken care of. You see, growing up, you learn language and you learn to talk and you learn to walk. And through language, you understand, start to understand how others see you. And that the mirror is evidence for how you're manifesting. And society is telling you this 24/7 that, in effect, you're not nothing, you are the one in the mirror. And you learn to put that on like a mask. We call it playing the face game. So I can't see my face here, but I've learned growing up that you can see it. And that when I touch here, you see my touching my cheek. So that this sensation must be the same as what I see in the mirror. So I imagine, imagine my cheek here until I think I can see it almost, or my mouth, you see. I can't. I mean, obviously, incredibly useful to know where your teeth are so you can brush them, or how where the top of your head is so you don't bang it, etc. Just to communicate, use language. But what happens is, as a baby, you're headless without knowing anything else. As a child, you're learning to put your face on and learning that others are behind a face because you're just a picture. How do I know you're conscious? Well, I have to learn. It's called theory of mind. I have to learn that just as when I do this movement and get sensations, you see me nodding. So I relate the sensation to the nodding. When I see you nodding, I add in empathize sensations, right? Empathy. So growing up is developing empathy, is developing the capacity, your capacity to put yourself in someone else's shoes. You see, and see yourself from there as well as see the rest of the world. So by the time you're an adult, you are completely living as if you are behind a face, as if you are the one in the mirror, as if you are what society says you are, even though you still can't see anything. Right? So my arms come back and disappear into nothing, but for society, they are attached to a head. So they're Richard's arms. They don't belong to nothing. So the third stage of the adult is I am walking around totally convinced I am what everyone is telling me I am, because it's 24/7, and there's just absolutely no option. There's no glitch in the matrix, you see, to see yourself in any other way. And most people live as if that's the truth about them, which means they're separate from others, and they're born and they'll die. All of that. So that influences how you live. I mean, and that is technically normal. Well, what is possible, the headless way is pointing to, I'm celebrating, is that now that you've done that, you can move forwards and take a fresh look for yourself at what you are. and see that you're not what you appear to be here. I am what I appear to be there to you. I'm Richard. But here, I'm not Richard. My hands, arms come out nothing out of the source here, you see. And this then complements that outside view. It's contrast, it's the opposite. So for you, I'm small. For me, I'm big. For you, I move around. For me, I'm still. For others, I'm head to head with everyone. Got that, need that. But for myself, I am you. So you can see how different this is from the social view, how wonderful it is. But now your life, you see, I was going to say, if you see this, of course, anyone can see it. The thing is to make it available so people have the chance to see it. All right. So that's the experiment, and that my work is just to put this out on the table so people can pick it up if they want. But you can't pick it up if it, you can't if you haven't come across it. You see. So the headless way, like, you know, this video here is yet another opportunity to get it out. The tools, you know, that you can feed a man for a day if you give him a rod and a line, right? No, if you can feed a man for a day if you give him a fish. He can feed himself alive if you give him a rod and a line, right? Well, you give them the experiments, put them out, and everyone can be aware of who they really are whenever they like. And they're not dependent on some, you know, sitting on a park bench and suddenly seeing who you are, you know, and then everyone's got to go and, you know, I mean, all these stories about people who've awoken in strange circumstances don't help others, because the point of it is you can't repeat it. You're not going to sit on a bench and get the same experience as someone who woke up, you know, but you can point, and you can look at another and see its face to no face, see. So you can see I'm enthusiastic.
Yes, I have another question, because what's the implication of this recognition? Do individuals continue to experience negative emotions after having seen their true nature?
Yes. So, I will talk about my experience, my view here, obviously. And it is that when you see the space you're looking out of, when you become aware of it, you can't half see it. You don't now see half your face or a quarter of your face or getting better now an eighth. You just can't. It's 100% available, full power now. And every time I look, I see that's true. But my understanding and the way it affects me develops slowly. And it develops slightly differently for everyone, I should think. And it is a, I would say that, I suppose the idea of people like Stop the Oil, you know, or the protest movements that keep throwing at you what they see to be the situation and the truth. And what happens is drip by drip by drip by drip, the truth sinks in until society changes. I suppose that could be an idea. So, with awareness of who you really are, one consciousness, see, the insights and the truths, the experience is 100%, but the understanding, drip by drip, sinks in, and it sinks into you personally and will keep sinking on in. In other words, it's not 100% understanding now. It is just, that's the way it works. So it gradually affects you more and more deeply, because you can't deny it. I can't deny it, I'll say it. So am I going to keep on living as if it's not true that I am space for the world, or am I going to enjoy it, go for the ride, surf on it, really say yes to an adventure, you see. So in terms of negative feelings, my observation is that just as I am capacity for you, space for you, just as I am capacity for the world, space for the world, I am capacity for my feelings. That they are, I am aware of them, as it were, to put it in inadequate language. I'm looking at them, just as I'm looking at you now, Ludo. I'm looking at my kitchen. I'm aware of my voice, the sound of my voice happening there in the silence here. And I'm aware of my mood and my feelings arising in the la absence of space here. So the feelings are not central. And of course, they don't stay around forever, they come and go. But what I am talking about here in particular is their location. And they don't define my true nature. They don't pollute my true nature. Now, like anyone, I'm deeply identified with my feelings and deeply under the social view that these are in me and they're mine and all of that. And they're not out there in the world. And I get that. You ha growing up, you need to recognize that, so that you take responsibility for them and for what you do and say, so you can distinguish between your feelings and the world, or between, and you say, well, these are my actions and those are yours. That is obviously vital to understand. When you wake up to who you are, you get another view, which is that, where do I stop and the world begins? See, is this is my action? And then you nodding your head is like, for me, they're all happening in me. I could, in a new language, I could say, I'm doing both. I'm either doing neither or I'm doing both, you see. And I say it with my feelings, that a way of putting it would be that, well, the world has color and shape and feeling. The feeling belongs to the world, just my thoughts belong to the world. Now, when you this is understandable in terms of personal development, because when you're a baby, your thoughts, if you have thoughts, your feelings, your images, are not yours. They're just out there in the world. And the little dragon that is running across the floor is as real as the cat. Right? Now, growing up is called theory of mind. You have to learn to distinguish between what is inside and what is outside. So your thoughts and feelings and sensations are inside, and people are outside. And put it in headless terms, your thoughts are behind the face you can't see. You see. So your putting on a face is your understanding there's an invisible barrier behind which you exist and beyond which everyone else exists. So that you have to understand, but it is a recognized as a developmental phase, and they do tests to see whether or not you have yet understood that your thoughts are not public, they're private, and other people have thoughts that you can't see. And if you don't develop that, you need care, because you can't function. You don't know the difference between inside and outside. So you've got that, and that's so deeply in us, we can't undo that, and you wouldn't want to. I mean, you couldn't function there. But this does not mean this is the only setup or way of seeing things. When you see you're headless, then you see there's no invisible barrier here that differentiates inside and outside. That everything is either outside or inside, you see. And so your thoughts are no more inside than the bird song. And your feelings, even if they're negative, are no more inside than the storm in the sky. Now, this does not mean that the storm goes away or your negative feelings go away, but you place them and you realize the space here is absolutely safe. and still and free. And it just is that. It is not say, oh, you're in denial. So, well, okay, I might be in denial about things, but even so, it's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. So whether you like it or not, you are safe. You are not polluted by these feelings. Now, it doesn't mean to say then that you don't go and talk to someone and try and sort out the problem. I mean, you do, but you're doing it now from this place of freedom rather than from this feeling that it's all gone wrong in you. You see, it's all gone sort of wrong there, so you need to do something, but operating from this true. I mean, it's not wishful thinking, it's just the way it is. And so I would say that the experience there is 100%. You can see that the feelings or thoughts are there, and there's your space for them here. But the understanding and the way that that seeps down into you, so to speak, will take time. And this is wonderful. You've got now something, a journey, an adventure, whilst you're also at home. So.
So it's kind of a direct path, but with a progressive unfoldment.
Exactly, well put. That's it. And I think, you see, this is the best of both worlds. This is having your cake and eating it. This is sitting by the fire with your feet up and being out in the ship with the wind behind you going for it. You're on an adventure. And this isn't this what we all want? I think the attraction of video games, I don't play them, is that you're on this fantastic, dangerous journey, but you're totally safe at home just doing this. But you have this deep feeling that you're in danger and you're about to win, or all of that whilst you're at home, you see. Well, that is a sort of image for living as who you are. The fact is, you're totally safe as who you are, and not as Richard could, have an accident today, but who you are really are is totally safe. Well, there you've got that two sides that you refer to, that you're totally at home and it's unfolding. And it seems to me that your true nature is just eternally creative. I mean, just the nature of, just as a tree produces leaves, the void produces things. And that's just, you wouldn't say, well, you trust that the tree is going to do that. That's just what it does. And that's just what your true nature does forever. And gosh, I mean, gosh. And for everyone, you see, this isn't an achievement. This isn't saying, oh, well, now I've got something and you don't. If you meditate for 10 years, you might begin just to, and you'll. I was listening to some teacher on YouTube, and it slipped out, as it were, or, that, her role was to, guide people along the path. Well, you see, I would phrase it differently. I think, give her credit for what she's doing, but very much so, but my language would be, well, we're both in the same place here, and I can share my experience, but it's just my experience. And please share yours, because this is a collaborative thing in a way.
It reminds me of lucid dreaming, where a character in the dream comes to see you and say, "Oh, just realize that you are dreaming, and we are both characters in the same dream."
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's a good image, you see. And now, if the character in the dream, because I mean, what's frustrating for people Because I was talking to a friend yesterday who had a book by a spiritual teacher, and he was saying everything is a headless friend. Met Douglas before me. Anyway, he was saying everything this teacher says is right. But at one point, she says to the, in the book, to the audience, I think it's talks, I haven't looked at it yet. She says, and it's self-evident. And my friend said, but it isn't. It isn't. You unless you have a way of accessing it, see, and that's what the experiments do. I'm pointing. Now look at what I'm pointing at there. Now it's self-evident, you see? Now it's self-evident. And these books, I say, these books by these teachers, which are, inspiring, are really only good if you already see who you are. Because if you don't, it's like, what is she, what are they talking about? But as soon as you do, you've kind of been let into the club, Oh, yeah. I remember when I'd done my first retreat with Dhiravamsa, and I was traveling back to London by train with a guy, and we had the book, a book by Dhiravamsa. And the guy said, God, I just can't understand what he's talking about. For me, every page was as clear as daylight. And that was simply because I had the experience, The Headless Way gives you the tools if you want them, you see. And it is just, I would say it's the first time in history where the experience of your true nature is being made accessible to anyone who sincerely does them, you see.
I have a question about that for everyone or anyone, because it's a teaching or a way which heavily relies in it seems to heavily re relies on visual perception. Oh, and is it also accessible or adapted for individuals who are blind or
Yes,
visually impaired?
of course. Just do the experiments that don't rely on vision. So, it's as simple as that. Close your eyes and you're aware of the darkness. How big is the darkness? Well, there's not a second one to compare it with. It's single, so I can't say how wide it is. Now, be aware of the field of sound. How big is that? Well, there isn't a second, so I can't, measure it, and it just fades out into silence. Now, be aware of your body sensations. Well, if you put aside the images, which presumably, if you don't have vision, you haven't really developed anyway. I don't know, but going by the sensations, how big are you? See, where is your boundary? Going by the thoughts and feelings and images, do those define you, or are they arising in this silence? There's no mind, you see. Well, you can go on. I'm going to open my eyes now, but there's lots in there. And a friend of mine, it's on the web, our website, under the experiments menu. He's blind, and he's written an article about experiment in seeing experiments for the blind. So, I just am talking to you because you've got vision and you're using vision, but and we're on video here. But the non-visual experiments are wonderful and are effective, I would say.
I've got another question for are there contraindications to this approach, or is it really for everyone? Are there
Well,
side effects?
side effects.
Yes, negative one.
Well, I have not seen those. Except I kind of know about one case. I'll come to that in a minute. But I think the thing is that you, first of all, when I share this, I hope at least I make clear that I am talking about my experience, and I believe you're in the same condition. But I don't know, but I'm acting as if you are. And so I'm not telling you something, I'm inviting you to look. And I am essentially, I suppose, if you boil it right down, saying, look, I can't see my head, instead, I see yours. Now, you see, I think that if someone feels threatened by that, I think probably what is happening is that you see you can't see your head, and then you go into thinking about it, and you interpret it as negative, as, oh my God, I've disappeared. Oh my God, how am I going to function if I don't know who I am? So you have now, I would say that it's likely that you probably dropped the experience and gone into thinking, and you've gone into negative thinking about it. And that can be where it's helpful to have a friend and say, well, look, the experience itself is non-verbal. In a way, it's neither good nor bad. But notice that as well as interpreting it as you've disappeared, you could interpret it as that you are reappearing, you're appearing as everything. So the negative, I've gone, is balanced by the positive, I've appeared as far more than I ever thought I was. So, now, the thing is that if someone doesn't like it, well, they'll drop it probably. Well, great. If you don't want it, if you're not ready for it, so to speak, if you think it's not for you, I'd be the last person to say, well, I think you should. I mean, well, I have no investment in that at all, if it, because I respect that resistance. It's for a reason. And I have a lot of experience of people, for whatever reason, not taking it up. And 5, 10 years later, coming back and going, oh my God, now I get it. You see, well, what they mean is now I can say yes to it. Now I can begin to see how it's going to help me. Now, the one case, and there's an interview I interviewed on video, this guy with his wife, Philip. So it's on our YouTube channel. What happened to him is when he came across headlessness, a long time ago, and we're still in touch with him. He, Douglas showed him. Now, he had been following Indian spirituality, Ramana Maharshi, Ananda Moy Ma, and this whole, he'd got involved in this whole Indian idea of becoming God and transcending your ego. It's an idea, all right? Now, when he saw who he was, when he saw his headless, he interpreted it as, oh, I'm God. But then kind of and felt that he disappeared. And in fact, it dest it, you know it, it destabilized him, or he felt destabilized and had to go to hospital. And when he came out of hospital, he dropped the whole headless thing and just took the view that he had to somehow forget all about being God and just be a person, ground himself, you see. And then after some years, came back to headlessness where he could be both. Yeah. So now that was obviously a result of his own conditioning, but I am very clear that this, you, when you see who you are and say you interpret that as God, that that does not mean that you're no longer a person. I'm God here, but I'm a person in interaction with you, and totally unavoidable. Never mind important, to deny your humanity is to be in denial about something that is obviously true. But to be in di but then you can say that to be in denial of your central divinity is to be in denial of something that is obviously true. See? And the thing about being aware of who you really are is, and this relates a bit to the negative feeling, is that at times the meaning runs out and it means nothing. It's just bare, the bare observation, you're empty for the world. And people at that point may think that they've lost it. As you get this experience of being space for everything, and it's wow, and it's I am you, and everything is in me, and I was never born and I will die. But that is an interpretation, a valid, true, important one. That is a reaction, a response, an insight. All insight comes and goes. And even the deepest realization will go. And at that point, especially the first time it happens, you think you've lost it. And friends are around to say, no, you haven't. You've lost the insight. And that this is like trees le losing leaves in winter. And the source, I mean, there's always something coming out of it. It's not just totally empty, but your insight has gone. Be patient, stay with the truth, and you will find that something new comes out. If you chase the old insight, you'll never catch it anyway. And so as you go along, you learn as you go along, and you understand that even the deepest feeling and insight and joy and bliss comes and goes, but you don't. And that you have to, as it were, bear and tolerate the desert until it flowers again. And it will flower, I say, just as the tree will leaf and the rose will bloom. Your true nature will bloom, but it has these seasons in terms of insight and joy and spiritual consolations, as they call them. And there is real value, you can see when it seeps in to your understanding that when nothing is going on, this nothing's gone wrong, and this is the precondition for something new and original to emerge. And so you begin to relax when that happens. Yeah.
That's really helpful, and I think it will help a lot of individuals on the path, on the spiritual path, because there's a lot of questioning on these games of hide and seek with true nature, and it's really beautiful.
And the game of hide and seek is, see, I would say it is not a mistake when you lose, when you feel you've lost who you are, because you can only enjoy rediscovering who you are if you've lost it. You can only really enjoy home if you've been away. As the prodigal son in Christianity, that you need to go away so you can come back and enjoy home, which you've never really left, but as if you have left it, you can enjoy it as if for the first time. And so, this rhythm that we all experience of seemingly losing who we are, and that this is now understood gradually, I suppose, as a really wise, deep, beautiful way of coming in the end to even deeper appreciation of who you are and a deeper feeling of home by this desert, going through the desert, 40 days in the desert. But by that, this, so when you're in the desert, when you feel that you're not at home, gradually it sinks in, I'm still at home. I just feel like I'm not at home. And the feeling will come back, but I don't have to force it, you see. And I don't have to manipulate it. I can wait and see how this time it comes, the rediscovery of who I am comes in a new way that I've never experienced before. If you're trying to manipulate it and chase it, you'll only get the same old thing, except even worse, kind of fossilized or something. But if you relax and you can't do that to order. You get the experience 100%. That's the key. You can test it, even though it's devoid of feeling. You can see, I'm looking out of a single eye now. Everything is in me. It's doing absolutely nothing for me, and I'm feeling down and blue and depressed. But if you're at the cinema and you're suddenly that, and the film goes into a really depressed theme, you don't think you've left the cinema. You're still at the, in the cinema. You don't even have to think, oh, I'm in the cinema. You know you're in the cinema, right? It's the same with it. Anytime you choose, you can look and see whether you're at home, and you are. Now, that's even true when you're feeling you're not at home and lost and you've done something stupid and all of that. This enables you to be kind to yourself because you say, ah, but it doesn't it I'm safe here, I'm clear here, and one just says, oh, this is just life. You do stupid things, you get depressed, you feel you've lost, I mean, who's in control of their lives? I keep thinking, when will you ever learn? Well, never.
We are coming to the end of this interview. And could you share informations about your upcoming seminars or guidance or training? Maybe it's on your website.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you, Ludo. I mean, I've talked a lot, but you've been very attentive and understanding, and I feel that we have been, on the same page. And thank you so much for hosting this, and potentially giving access to more people these tools, so that we. This gets around. So thank you for that. In terms of community, then we have lots of Zoom meetings that are free, lots every week, and people are welcome to drop in and join us and see if it is useful to them and make friends. Make friends. So I feel like I'm making friends with you. I mean, we value the. I believe we value the same. Truth here. There are workshops I'm doing, and you'll find them on our website, headless.com, and YouTube channel. And also, we've got an app, Headless Way app. So there's lots of resources, and I love hearing from people. So, yeah.
I will put all the links in the description of the video, and thank you for taking the time to delve into these subjects and the headless way and your personal journey also. It was very precious.
Well, a delight to be with you, Ludo, and
Have a good day.
you.
Bye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.